Welcome to the She Births Show Season 3, a place to inspire your birth, evolve your parenting, and help you live a life you love. I am Nadine Richardson, your host and creator of the scientifically verified childbirth education program, She Births. I'm also a mother, yoga teacher, doula, author, speaker. At She Births, we have supported thousands of families around the world for over 12 years with our unique program. And our vision is to make birth better for every family around the world. We hope that everyone experiences a beautiful birth no matter what unfolds. Not only do we help people have beautiful births, but we give them the skills and the philosophy to enjoy pregnancy and even make parenting easier. Our free pregnancy support guide is a place that you can utilize as a pre-education tool to help you feel calm, connected, and inspired throughout pregnancy, rather than guilty and worried and stressed. Remember, if you like what you hear today in our podcast, please subscribe, share with a friend, leave us a review. So if you're a parent about to be one, a fellow health professional, join us now for an inspirational deep dive into topics with experts around the globe. I hope you enjoy this very special episode. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 3, Bringing Ayurveda Home with Dylan Smith. Dylan is a great friend and a certified Ayurvedic practitioner. He's a holistic health educator based in Sydney and runs and operates the Vital Veda Clinic, offering patients, consultations, body treatments, and detoxification programs. Dylan travels the world sharing his passion and is also a lecturer at the Collective Wellness Institute. He continues his journeys back to South India and works very closely with the renowned Raju Family Clinic. In our conversation today with Dylan, we aim to demystify and simplify Ayurveda so that you can adopt some of these life-changing and nourishing practices in your home and daily routine. We talk about how Dylan went from studying architecture to studying Ayurveda in South India. We discuss the three pillars of longevity, the power of finding balance across those three pillars in your life. We hope you enjoy this conversation. Welcome, Dylan, to the She Births Show.
Thank you.
Even though we're sitting in your lounge room right now. We've known each other for a really long time, and I'm so glad that you're finally on our podcast. And I'm so excited that I'm about to have a massage with you as well. Let's get work done first.
Yeah.
I suppose I want this podcast to be a beautiful introduction, I think, for a lot of people into the wonderful world of Ayurveda. A huge amount of people like do She Births and just hear maybe that term Ayurveda for the first time. And we talk about it in the She Births book. Robert Svoboda was a big influence, I suppose, in my sort of journey. And, you know, from doing yoga for so many years, it's just kind of the next step, I think, for a lot of people. But a lot of people don't know a lot about it. And I think it would be really great to get some principles, philosophies, tools and tips and strategies that we can bring into our life, because I think it has such an amazing... So it is a source of amazing wisdom and so many benefits. Do you agree?
Yeah, totally.
So many. So firstly, I mean, you're a young guy. You started like doing this a long time ago, and I remember it was your mum at Brew Cafe said, "You must have a massage with my son." I'm like, "Who is this Jewish woman spruiking her son?" And I'm like, "No, I don't really like massages with men. I'm fine." She's like, "No, you must." And I'm like, "Okay, Mish, I'll give it a go." And I never looked back. I don't know how long ago that was, because your massages are the best. They're better than even what we have in India. So, and I remember going, "My God, he's really young, but like you're doing the thing that you were called to do." I think when you meet people who are doing what they're called to do, there's a light that really shines through.
and something sparkles and there's a magic. So yeah, like tell me how you ended up so young doing this like whole trips to India and learning and practicing Ayurveda and all that. Tell me.
Through my mum essentially.
Really?
Yeah, but like the basis of it is that through the Vedic meditation, through the tradition so that we're hearing and you know, the Vedic meditation tradition is from the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's lineage or the Shankaracharya tradition. And they, you know, I got into the meditation first and then my mother was going to this clinic in India for Panchakarma for a Vedic detox and rejuvenation program with this family of doctors called the Raju family. And they, the reason how she got to that is through the meditation because they... Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was the man who taught the Beatles to meditate and who brought the Veda, Ayurveda and meditation and yoga to the West significantly, he took Dr. Raju and spread Ayurveda in the West.
Yeah, right.
So they were very close to him. And that's why a lot of people from this tradition go to see the Raju family for treatment. So that's really the essence of it. And then she introduced me to it. She actually took me there for the first time.
How old were you when you went the first time?
This was... during my gap year after high school, so wow. I was about 18 or 19.
Yeah.
And it was after 2.5 months in Europe on a shoestring budget, eating like cheese and crackers every day and not very healthy, I went into my mother's arms in India, my biological mother as well as Mother India, as well as the Raju family as like a very mother. And I was just nourished for 2 weeks of Panchakarma and that's and I still was not meditating then. I then traveled to India and learned yoga for the first time and was doing it every day for 2 hours every day. I loved it. I came back to Australia and I'm like, okay, I'm actually ready to meditate again. I learned when I was a child, but this was again, I did it properly. So I learned Vedic meditation. And then 1 year after that, I decided I wanted to change my career and I was at Panchakarma Clinic at the time with a friend. Just doing a regular Panchakarma and I said to the Rajus, I don't want to study at university anymore. What do you think I should do? And he said, come study Ayurveda with us. don't go anywhere else, just study here. And I didn't think much about it.
Wow.
And I just did it.
You just jumped.
Yeah.
And what were you jumping from?
I was studying architecture at university.
Oh, wow. Like your dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And I was like it, but then, and then I read a Deepak Chopra book and I learned about Dharma. While I was in Panchakarma, I read it and I'm like, okay, I definitely don't want to do that. What should I do?
Yeah.
And I didn't think much about it. I just surrendered and said, sure.
Yeah. And it just felt right.
I didn't even think much about it. I just went at it. I guess because Dr. Raju is such an enlightened man and he told, and my mum was there as well at the time, actually. She came later and she was there for that. And she, you know, has been seeing him for years. So it was just like, yeah, we'll just do it.
And we should say as well that your mum, you know, went to the Rajus to help with cancer treatment. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, she had a double mastectomy and then healed the breast cancer throughout. So luckily didn't have any treatment. So that's why she was going so regularly to Panchakarma once or twice a year for a few years.
Yeah, wow.
For that.
I mean, people probably don't even know. They might have heard that term, Panchakarma, or they might have heard of things through Deepak Chopra as well and stuff like that. So maybe we should... It's such a great story. I love it. And how long ago was that?
That would have been in 2012 or 11. Okay. Yeah, 2012.
Beautiful. And you've gone back every year since.
Yeah, every year, definitely. I used to live there half the year, 6 months a year.
Yeah, that's right.
And now I'm getting, you know, want to be with my business more here in Australia, so I'm keeping it to a minimum. Still minimum is now 2 months, but I still have to go every year for some initiation.
Yeah.
And that will... At least it's going for 7 years, then we'll see what happens next. But I'll probably still keep going every year.
I do love old school training.
I love it as well.
Me too. That's like what I did as a yoga teacher. It was like an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
And it's, you miss certain things. I feel like I missed, you know, doing tests on anatomy and stuff and physiology. Like I'm not an expert on those sorts of things when it comes to yoga. But the embodiment of an art... The art of teaching, the embodiment of the spiritual practices. Yeah.
That's spiritual practices is huge.
And I think the transmission, the power of transmission from your teacher to the student through service and surrender and humility is without a doubt.
Totally.
Profound.
Much more profound than hours of reading books. And
yes.
I would, when I was first there, I was getting like 5 to 10 minutes a day with him.
Wow.
And it was so profound. Like, I just remembered, like, and it, they were really testing me, especially when I first started going. Like, they were really testing me. I couldn't believe it. And they still do. And just about how much of their attention they give me, and they're just seeing how worthy I am and how devoted.
Yeah.
And there's been other students been there with me, and they've left. Like,
yeah, bet.
They couldn't stand it. And but that 5 or 10 minutes would just be like so profound.
It's great. Enough, right? It's yeah. enough to integrate until the next meeting, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was always thirsty for more, but it was,
yeah. It was good. Surrender. You're going, this is yeah. it. Yeah, I do love that. I hope we have a renaissance. We're going through COVID now, whenever you're listening to this, and we've had the beautiful renaissance of family time and simplifying and localizing economies, hopefully, more and more. And I hope we have a renaissance in old school type teaching and traineeships and stuff like that. I think they're really beautiful and important. So maybe we could talk a bit about, like, really the principles. Well, you know, we have pillars to She Births, and as far as I understand, and please correct me because I don't have a huge amount of knowledge, there are these three pillars to health in Ayurveda. So we want to talk about pre and post pregnancy, but there's these principles that we can apply across the whole of life, right? That Sobota talked about. So Dr. Sobota was the very first Westerner to become an Ayurvedic doctor that spent time traveling over there, and he's still around. But yeah, his book Prakriti was really profound for me, and that's where I learn about these three pillars of health. But maybe you've got a different way or a better way. Maybe you could explain them to us. That would be awesome.
I think before that, let's just quickly define Ayurveda.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Okay, good, yes.
Ayurveda is a Sanskrit word. Ayur means life, and Veda means science. So Ayurveda is the science of life.
Yeah.
Such a broad and holistic body of knowledge, which encompasses everything in life. So really, it has a say in everything in life. It can be applied to for any stage of life, of course. And the essence of Ayurveda is about attuning you to nature. And when you tune to nature, you tap into your own human nature, and that's where perfect health lies. So it sees that the state of health is within everyone. The memory of health is within everyone. Everyone was born pretty much perfectly healthy. Even if you were not, maybe you were missing an organ, you still have the memory of perfect health on a cellular level. So it's about enlivening that. It's not so much about removing disease, it's about enlivening health within that person. And then when that comes, naturally the disease will go.
That's really a big difference, right, to Western sort of science medical models.
Yeah.
The removal of disease, often waiting for symptoms to occur and manifest so greatly, for example, into a tumor that can be seen on a scan in order to then remove and treat, whereas Ayurveda is about enlivening, enhancing, reconnecting back to our true nature, our true selves.
And that goes with preventing as well. So
and
that's the essence. And then that's why you can enliven health within even someone who's terminally ill or who have decades of chronic disease. That's how you bring it back. You got to remind them what it is to be like.
Interesting.
And within the Ayurveda, there are three pillars of health. It's called the Traya Upastamba. Traya.
Three.
It's three, and upa means like pillars, and stamba means stability. So it's like the three pillars, and they are food, ahara, nidra, sleep, and the third one is brahmacharya, which is somewhat misunderstood, as usually people will call it celibacy. In this case, it's definitely not celibacy. You can further that into sexual conduct in general. But really, Brahma means creation, and charya means regime. So it's like the regime of creation.
Wow.
Which very much is involved with procreation and reproduction. That's why, you know, it's very well known to be involved with the sex.
Yeah.
But also it's anything in creation. It's your daily routine. It's your seasonal routine. It's all that.
Right.
And
because we're living our day is a creative process all the time. You're waking up every day and you're creating all the time, continually, through how you live and like micro choices and stuff like that, through to big developments, the creative process of birthing, As well, there's lots of when people listen to like the Jade Hardwick Collings, you'll hear that how we birth is how we've been taught through our mother's line to create our life. So like for me, it's been like a long, hard, grinding process, the labour. But that kind of belief system around creation came from my mum, and her approach to being a woman was long, burdensome, hard, challenging, relentless, you know, that kind of belief system around creation. So, yeah, how we create our daily lives, how we go through our sexuality, how we go through birth.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing.
How we create
creation.
Our food, how we create our,
yeah.
The next daily activity that's coming up.
Yeah.
What action are we going to create?
Yeah.
Everything.
So you got food, sleep, creation.
Yeah. Conduct. Just
yeah.
General,
so I've heard regime. Also instead of food, like diet and digestion.
Yeah.
And sleep can be rest as well.
Yes.
And then that third one, the creation.
Yeah. Just regime and routine generally.
Regime and routine.
And reproduction is huge. Like in Ayurveda, there's actually 8 branches.
Oh, really?
And like as anyone who's kind of briefly looked into Ayurveda knows, it's a huge body of knowledge. And there's 8 branches, and it's like internal medicine, pediatrics, ear, neck and throat, psychological health, and one of them is longevity, and one of them is called Vajikarana. It's aphrodisiac therapy.
I'll have that one, thanks.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it does, but it's mainly also for the reproduction. Like,
yeah, right.
You know, it's Ayurveda gives so much knowledge and so much teachings about reproduction and about you know, preconception, pregnancy and postnatal, because it's so important. Like that's the creation of a human, and that's why it's, you know, it's one of my biggest passions is that area, because it's the ultimate way to create health for that future person, or intervene on their physiology for their health. If we can implement measures at these times, at these crucial times, that will determine that human being's future health for their whole life.
Totally.
It will blueprint on it as much as very influential. So
absolutely.
It has a big emphasis on that.
Yeah, and also the woman, you know, herself is up for a huge amount of change. It's a very plastic time for her in her brain and her chemistry as well, right? And partners as well, I see as well, this time to create so much change and so on.
Yes. So yeah, those are the 3 pillars of health, and, you know, really important. I mean, we all know sleep's very important.
Yeah.
And it really is, you know, it's the main time you repair and rejuvenate.
Yeah.
And, you know, you want to get the best sleep. We can maybe go if you want to go into it. But then food obviously is also very important. It's what maintains our tissues. It's what maintains our health.
Yeah.
And then our actions.
Yeah, right. So can we dive into food a little bit and just sort of, because, you know, we're sitting here sipping hot water while we talk, right? Why, let's talk like, what are the top takeaways? Like the big ones for me has certainly been drinking hot water throughout my day, and we recommend everyone postpartum to do that, and especially do that if you have had any kind of chemicals throughout labor, analgesia, anesthesia or a cesarean section to help flush out the liver and the systems. But why do we sip hot water?
Sipping hot water is a profound purification technique. It's like we use hot water to wash grease off dirty dishes. The sipping the hot water removes the toxins in the intestines or the undigested food material, and it dilates the channels. It opens up channels like the lymph channel, the blood circulation, and it softens the tissues, especially like after birth. You know, you want to, like, you use hot water to, hot water on leather will soften the leather, but the cold water will harden the leather. So it softens the tissues.
Yeah, right.
And it's just, whenever you're feeling any toxins or any indigested food or anything, you just sip hot water after, it will clear it very effectively. And the hotter the better. And it's not about how much water you drink, it's about how frequently you sip. So frequently sips of hot water will melt the toxins and flush.
Yeah.
And plain is the best because it will do the whole body. But if you want to do some herbal tea or anything, you can. But generally it should be plain. Yeah, see, if you put lemon, it will go directly to the liver.
Yeah.
If you had ginger, it will go directly to the stomach, the digestion. But if you have plain, it does all the channels.
Yeah. And so that's, I've heard of even people overdoing the lemon water postpartum and it influencing their kind of breast milk supply. So it's like everything in moderation, like the lemon water to stimulate liver, maybe it's the second cup of hot water in the morning or something, and ginger water before digestion. But overall, it's just a plain sipping of hot water.
Mm. And then, of course, if it's postnatal, they can have the fenugreek tea more.
Yeah.
That will be good for the lactation.
Lactation, yeah. Yeah, you get just so boil. Sick of drinking fenugreek.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure, but...
That's good.
Okay, you should have at least one a day maybe postnatal.
Yeah, totally. And what about all the warm foods and all that kind of stuff and kitchery and all these things? What are they all about? Yeah,
I think the one thing I really like about teaching Ayurvedic nutrition and also with patients as well is I kind of... liberate. So many people get rigid and into the nutrition and think, oh, into diets and things, and I have to eat this, but I can't eat this, and I can't eat it. Ayurveda is not like that. It's simple principles, and the principles are whatever's hot, whatever's cooked.
Nice.
So the first principle is eat food that's hot. By hot, it means cooked. Okay, fruit, you don't have to eat. You don't have to cook it because nature cooks it. The sun cooks it. So first thing is eat whatever's hot. Second is eat whatever's it should have some unctuousness, like some oiliness. It should not be dry. As a culture, we're generally very much dry. Most of us are dehydrated.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're dried out because we're living in air conditioning and looking at screens, which dry out our body and our brain through our eyes. So we need to lubricate more. And the food should always have some lubrication. And a lot of the foods are dry because they're, you know, leftovers, or they're processed, or they're using, you know, oils that have been deodorized and bleached and which actually dry us out. So, and then the other principles are everything should be fresh and seasonal. That's it. Don't think about this fruit, that fruit, this vegetable. Whatever's in season, nature's providing what your body needs.
Yeah.
So.
And we're a part of nature, so let's resonate with that, right?
Yes. Yeah. Nature's complex, so we can be simple. Like, we can analyze nature's patterns of what it brings to harvest in the season to be an antidote to whatever we're experiencing in our physiology. But it doesn't matter. Don't have to analyze it. Just go eat whatever's local.
Yeah.
Seasonal, and that will take care. Like the spring, it will, you know, decongest what's built up over the winter.
Yeah.
And the summer, all the ripe fruits and vegetables have been ripening on the vine, and now they're ready to dissipate the heat.
Mm.
And the winter, naturally, more the acidic and the insulating foods are there to keep us warm.
Yeah, and I think mandarins help with snot too, right, in winter.
Mandarins start with snot.
No. Snotty nose mandarins.
Mm.
Is it, I think, Chinese medicine kind of.
Okay.
There's a lot of alignments between sort of TCM,
totally,
traditional Chinese medicine, and Ayurveda. Mm. But I love that simplicity. And, you know, of course, in the She Births book, we recommend there's a khichdi recipe that I've kind of tweaked over the years. Why do we eat khichdi, and when should we eat khichdi?
Khichdi is it's split yellow mung dal, which is a lentil, and rice and spices. And it's a complete protein, because whenever you mix a legume and a grain, you get a complete protein, all 9 essential amino acids. And also it's very nutritious with all the spices, and primarily cooked with ghee or another type of quality oil. That's real khichdi. And if you want to add some vegetables, you can, but then it's khichdi with vegetables. That's fine. But generally, because it's such a staple, like that's why rice and beans have been eating for millennia, because it's...
And longevity is really connected to beans as well, right?
Yes,
beans,
that's
in the
true.
Diet. Yeah.
Legume, yeah. And I think one of the reasons is that because they're not eating as much meat.
Yeah.
And we never ate so much meat, anthropologically speaking, like all this paleo diet's like going hard on the meat. But, you know, the hunter and gatherers did much more gathering than hunting. They wouldn't hunt that much. But so it's just a fantastic staple, and it's very nourishing. It's actually quite good for detoxification.
Yeah.
Not that it's going to cause excess detoxification, but if you want to, I mainly recommend it to most patients to have, like, depending on where they're at, like 2 to 4 times a week for dinner, just to reset digestion, especially if someone has digestive issues, it can really help slowly build the digestion. And whenever we give someone a cleanse in Ayurveda, or after, they'll typically start with some, like, they'll start building up their digestion slowly. Like, first they'll start with a kanji, like a rice gruel.
Yeah.
Then they'll go on to khichdi. Then they can go on to more normal foods.
Yeah.
But not too complex, like still maintaining the root vegetables first, then later the leafy greens, which are more complex in their,
right,
you know, chemicals of constituents.
a bit harder on the system.
Yeah.
A bit more challenging.
So it's just great for people with low digestion, and it's a beautiful dish. It's tasty. It's nourishing.
I know. It's people so love good.
It. And it's so easy. It takes like 10 minutes to cook.
I know. If you soak everything, which of course we encourage, it can be so quick and easy, just a one pot meal.
Definitely.
And then you mentioned ghee, and I put ghee in my coffee in the morning, and I put ghee. I keep forgetting to put those extra herbs that you gave me for my coffee.
Samadhi.
Yeah. I'm going to do that. And we put ghee on top of like our khichdi, and then I recommend like hot milk at night with ghee and so on. What is ghee all about and why is it so good for us?
Ghee is clarified butter. It's literally just butter, and you boil it. And when you boil it, you separate this liquid gold from all this browny red gunk. And this browny red gunk is impurities of butter, and it's also all the lactose and the milk solids. So that's why lactose intolerant people can eat ghee. And it's completely different from butter. It's very good for digestion. If you have a small little fire and you put extra virgin organic olive oil on the fire will go out. But if you put the ghee on it, the fire will roar. So it's a quality called, in Ayurveda we call it dipana, which means it enkindles the digestive fire.
Yeah.
So it increases it. So if you eat ghee with the food, it will help deliver that food to your digestion, and it will help you digest it. You know, there's two things which happen from food. Either one, it turns to a thin fluid, gives you nutrients and energy. We call that rasa. It's like the essence. It's like that fluid essence which gives life and feeds our tissues, and essentially is very important for fertility.
Yeah.
Or it will turn to a thick fluid, which is called ama, and that will block a channel.
Yeah.
Or deposits anywhere in the body, depending on that person, where they're weak.
Yeah.
So generally we want all the food, of course, to be turning into rasa, to the thin fluid, to give us energy and nutrients. And if we cook the food with ghee, it will make that happen more, it'll be more probable because we deliver it. So it enkindles the digestion, it lubricates. It's one of the best ways to lubricate, especially everywhere in the body, the gut, but also the brain. In Ayurveda, actually, it says the main thing for ghee is the intelligence. It increases the intelligence. And that's because it increases the, you know, lubrication in the brain. As I said, we've got epidemics of dryness, and a lot of the dryness is in the brain. And this is what's leading to an epidemic of Alzheimer's and dementia because it's dry brain. It's vata in the brain.
Yeah.
So ghee is very helpful for that.
Yeah.
Dry skin, all this, and the joints, dry joints, helping with the joint issues, helping with healthy cholesterol. It's not going to cause fat, get you fat. It's not
fatty liver or anything like that, not at all.
And if you need to lose weight, it'll help you lose weight. If you need to put on weight, it'll help you put on weight because it helps with the metabolism. So, and it's extremely tasty.
It's so good. I can eat just like tablespoons of it.
Yeah, so use it as a cooking oil.
Yeah.
And then again, you can, as you do and as I do, we can put it on our food.
Yeah, that's right. And I see it for a lot of mums, like, even pre-diabetic or testing positive for gestational diabetes, one or two, some mums even coming in with it. But when they put some oil on their food, it just stabilizes their energy levels and stops any spiking. And when we stop that spiking in our sugar levels, we're going to get more stable mood as well. There's so many benefits to adding oils and ghees to our foods. Okay, I could keep going down that rabbit hole.
And we should add ghees. There's two very important foods to have postnatal. One of them is ghee.
Uh-huh.
Another one is garlic.
And garlic. Tell us why the garlic.
Garlic is a very good way to balance vata. So after
To talk about vata.
Yeah. So after you give birth, you have a lot of vata in your body because vata, for those who have heard of vata pitta kapha, the three doshas, they're basically just summaries of the five elements of nature. The five elements of nature are space, air, fire, water, earth. So these doshas, Ayurveda's made it even more simple. It's gone from five to three, and it's just made three doshas. And the vata is the air and space element. And that's very high and increased in a woman after they give birth because they just had a fetus in their belly for 9 months, 10 months, and then it's suddenly empty.
Yeah.
So they've got heaps of air and space elements suddenly.
Yeah.
So they have a rapid increase of it, which causes, you know, erratic hormones or all these things that happen. So the garlic is very good for that. And it's excellent for that, and it helps with the breastfeeding and
amazing.
Everything.
Does it have to be like crushed and roasted, or how?
The best way to eat garlic is to remove the inner green sprout.
Oh, really?
Within each clove. So if you're getting proper garlic, not like hybridized GMO stuff, it should have an inner green sprout. Remove that and then fry it in ghee.
Oh,
that's
cool.
The best.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can have, for those who have a cold, you can have raw garlic on rice or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But mainly garlic.
And really pacifying the vata.
Yeah.
Okay, before we get into more sort of pacifying and postnatal, can you just explain to us why hot milk is so good?
Yeah, hot milk. So if you can get good quality milk, we recommend getting non-homogenized milk, which just means non-processed. If you can get raw, that's great. And you mix the hot milk with equal amounts of water and boil it. So a lot of people say, I can't digest milk, it's hard to digest. But if you transform it, Ayurveda has a big emphasis on transformation. As I said, the first principle was cooking the food.
Yeah.
So yes, milk is heavy, congesting, mucus creating, but as soon as you dilute it with water and boil it, you remove those qualities to some extent. You do remove them a lot. If you want to make it, take it a step further, add some turmeric and black pepper.
Yeah.
Then it's easily digestible. And, you know, drink that. As a mother, milk is one of the quickest ways to feed your reproductive tissue. The reproductive tissue takes a long time to be fed in terms of metabolism and to get nutrients there.
Yeah.
It's the last tissue to be nourished. So some foods can feed it straight away. Milk is one of them. So for preconception, for fertility and postnatal also, it will help build, and of course the breast milk and other things.
Yeah, right.
And
it helps you sleep at night, right?
That's the thing.
It helps the nervous system relax.
Totally. So, you know, golden milk is a famous thing now in the West, which is, you know, come from Ayurveda. And people are saying, can I replace with cow almond milk or whenever any other alternative? You won't be getting the same effects. You'll be getting some effects of having the spices, but the cow's milk has certain peptides which reduce cortisol, the stress hormone, and that helps with sleep. And cortisol and melatonin are antagonists. So when cortisol is down, melatonin will come up, and you need melatonin for your sleep and also for your brain antioxidant.
You need melatonin to be up to go into labor. You need melatonin to be up for oxytocin to be up.
Yes.
So yeah. I'm so going to go back to that hot milk. You've just reminded me. And sometimes I get in pregnancy the mums to like tear up dates, a couple of the medial dates, because we get the dates and we get the prostaglandins coming through then. And it's such a rich substance to be giving ourselves, right?
Dates are one of those other foods that can directly nourish the OGS or the reproductive essence quicker. Dates, ghee as well. That's why we had the ghee.
And ghee in the hot
some
milk
spices
as well.
Like cardamom, saffron.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
People have to listen to your spice podcast, Epic Spice Podcast.
He's so good with herbies.
Herbies, yeah. If you all remember Herbie's spices.
He's a man obsessed with spices. It's too good.
Deep dive on that one. Okay, so that's sort of foods. And I suppose people might find that their digestion's quite sluggish in pregnancy as well. We're big fans of magnesium supplementation and high magnesium and 3 to 6 cups of vegetables a day and that kind of thing. It's really important that we're eliminating well, right, from Ayurveda perspective. So we're often taking triphala as well. I'm not sure. Can you take triphala not through pregnancy.
We want to be very careful with all detox.
Detoxing things, yeah.
Because you don't want to detox the fetus.
So you've got to really work with the foods that you've got and improving digestion.
And sipping hot water is very helpful.
Yeah.
Ghee and leafy greens, mandarins, if they're having a problem with eliminating. But every day they should be eliminating, every morning.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And what about sleep and rest? You know, some people of the school of thought, like, I'm amazing. I only need to sleep 6 hours a night. And other people are like, no, but you must have 8 to 10 hours a night. Or some people are like, it's just about the time that you get the sleep. What's the Ayurvedic approach?
Yeah, it's not about how many hours you're getting sleep. It's about when you sleep.
Yes.
So between 10 till 2 is the crucial time. That's the pitta time or the fire element. And that's the time where we secrete melatonin maximum.
Yeah.
And we detoxify the liver and repair the liver and absorb micronutrients. So we eat the food in the day, but we absorb all these vitamins and magnesium and minerals between that time. So actually a lot of the nutrient deficiencies which we're facing, there's a huge epidemic of nutrient deficiencies.
Yeah.
It's because people aren't sleeping between 10 and 2. That's the time when they actually absorb it.
I'll tell that to my teenage son tonight. But different world.
Yeah, different.
But that's interesting, that 10 to 2, because a big sort of thing started about 20 years ago in the birth space or parenting space, which was when babies go down to sleep at like 7 or 8 at night, even 9, we'd still wake them up just before we go to sleep ourselves for a dream feed. So it might be around the 10 o'clock mark, 10 to 11. Wake them up a wee bit, disturb them, open up their zipper jackets and tickle their feet or whatever and put them on the boob to give them a dream feed. And then you would see people being much more restored, women, if they could, because then the baby might sleep through till 2 and you'd get a good chunk.
Yeah, great.
And it is that big, that magic chunk.
That is, yeah, yeah. That's the crucial chunk.
It's crucial. But what are the other ways, like, there's a lot more to rest than just sleeping, right?
And also I'll just add to sleep, you know, for maximum melatonin, you want to reduce, a precursor for melatonin is darkness for 4 hours before you go to sleep. So you don't want to be on the screens, you know, or have the lights on in the house right up until 10 o'clock. Like if you do, you want to reduce them as much as possible. Dim the lights, use the blue light blocking glasses. If you're watching TV, use the glasses. And another precursor for melatonin is in the day, you have to get the daylight and the sunlight on your skin. And that's, and of course, sleep free of electromagnetic fields. Don't have the phone on near you, especially when you're pregnant, because your fetus will feel that radiation 20 times in the womb. So, you know, you don't want to have a phone near you. You can if it's on airplane mode, and you don't want to have a Wi-Fi router within 6 meters of you.
Right.
That's on. You're asleep. You don't need the Wi-Fi. Turn it off. It's very biologically active, especially on the tissues of the brain, the heart and genitals.
There's been a lot going on around fertility and EMF.
Totally.
Huge amount because of the subtlety of it all. We think it doesn't exist, but
it activates calcium gated channels, which are channels which, you know, when you get excess calcium, you get free radicals. And they're most concentrated in the brain, heart and genitals.
Right.
And the male reproductive, you know, the male sperm counts dropped 50% in 30 years ever since they've been testing it, since the early late 1800s or whatever. That's ridiculous. It's so, infertility is so big in males right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I keep seeing so much infertility in my clinic and, you know, it's not always the women. People are thinking it's the women.
Absolutely.
It's 50% the man. And one of the reasons is because they're having phones in their pocket and zapping their balls.
Yeah, I know. And or lying in bed like Leroy does with the laptop on his...
Yeah.
I'm like, can we please have grandchildren? Can you not?
and they can feel it. Like, I invite anyone to listening, like even just knowing about it from listening to this right now.
Yeah.
Next time you put the laptop on your lap, can you feel it? Like you don't have to be that intuitive and have that heightened sensory perception. I think it's so strong that, of course, people who are very ignorant and out of touch with their bodies won't feel it.
Yeah.
As soon as you know and consider it, try next time. You probably can feel it.
Yeah, interesting.
You can use the mats for people who won't, you know, who really like to sit with their laptop. You can get these shields, like a magazine.
Yeah. Well, I'm a good mummy because sometimes when Leroy's sleeping, and he was sleeping at my dad's house in the study that has the Wi-Fi thing, and everyone in the house insisted that it stayed on at night because grandpa wakes up at 2 in the morning and starts watching Netflix. So I snuck in when Leroy was up there, and I have a clear quartz crystal with like a special copper wire wrapped around it that my chiropractor and I just put that underneath like Leroy's pillow while he's sleeping to just protect his brain from the Wi-Fi. Anyway. But there's a lot of things about like even resting in the day that, you know, Ayurveda says and stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, you should not sleep in the day.
Right.
Even if you're pregnant.
Really?
Just because if it disturbs the night sleep, which it probably will.
What about like the 20-minute nap?
20-minute meditation is better.
20-minute meditation is better. Well, that's good. The They've all got their visualizations, right? They can do that as well. Yeah.
I mean, that's the best rest. You get the deep rest and the profound rest, and the studies have shown that with the reduced metabolic rate and increased oxygen consumption.
Yeah.
So the thing is about sleeping during the day is we don't want to disturb that. They need to have good night's sleep, the brain of women. So if that's going to disturb it, which it can with most people, we want to maintain. And I really like the idea of feeding before 10. That's really good.
Yeah, the little dreams, dreams feed. They're cute, right? So is there anything else around rest and sleep?
Well, rest is, I mean, during pregnancy, it's very important because we don't want to increase hyperactivity in the body.
Yes.
And we don't want to increase the Vata. So especially during the first trimester when there's, you know, we want to maintain the pregnancy. And it's just right now, it's too common. Like I see it, you see it. Like the amount of miscarriages and all these things. So really first trimester, rest. And you know, definitely avoid plane travel because that will strongly increase the Vata and all travel really. I mean, vata is movement.
Yes.
So anything, you don't want to have too much movements in the body.
Yeah.
So resting is like the antagonist to moving. And then also in the eighth month is also a crucial month.
Big time for slowing down.
Yeah. So just rest in general as much as you can, and so that you can, you know, reduce stress essentially and increase purity.
Yeah.
That's the main theme of pregnancy, is what we call sattva. And it's just purity. Purity in your diet, pure relationships, pure activities, you know, being in sunlight, in nature, not being in toxic relationships.
Yeah.
This is gonna, you know, have such an influence on your fetus.
Yeah.
So pure state of mind. State of mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why you want to reduce all these things. So.
Yeah, no, I love that you brought in the word sattva. It's so important. Moving from vata to sattva. Good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So rest, digestion, creativity, anything else in those three pillars that you sort of see in your clinic, like that are absolutely critical, you know, or common?
All the creation part, or the charya, Ramacharya, is just the regime. So it's, again, with the rest is included in the time of sleeping before 10, waking up before sunrise, meditating twice a day, giving yourself an oil massage.
Yes, we've got to talk about that.
Okay, so that's an amazing self-practice to do, and it's part of the daily routine. It's putting, you know, we bathe every day. That's also part of the daily routine.
Yeah.
But as well as washing ourselves, we have to put oil on our body and give ourselves a massage. And it's like lubricating, and it's feeding the microbiology on our skin. We have the same amount of microbes on our skin than in our gut.
Yeah.
So we've all probably heard of gut flora, microbiome, all the exciting research. It's not just in the gut, it's on the skin. So microbes love oil, especially Ayurvedic medicated oils. So if you can get those, otherwise use sesame oil in winter, coconut oil in summer. Or if you're pregnant, use coconut oil all around, because we want it. Sesame oil can be quite heating.
Yes, and we're quite warm already.
Yeah.
Buns in the oven, oven switched on. Yeah.
And we just, in all heating things, we want to be careful with during the pregnancy, because it can cause the fetus to go. So giving yourself a massage every day before bath, even if it's just for a couple of minutes, applying oil on your body, or sitting down on a towel on the floor and giving yourself a massage. And the main thing that people feel is for the nervous system.
Yeah.
Because your skin has more nerve endings than anything. So it makes them feel much more grounded, calm, helps with the sleep. If anyone's experiencing anxiety, it helps a lot with that.
Yeah.
So doing that every day. And the lymphatic system, it moves, the blood circulation. There's so many benefits. You can try it, you'll feel it.
It's quite extraordinary how just a short, simple practice of Abhyanga, self-massage, changes how you think and feel.
Yes.
In body and mind and emotional state. It's quite remarkable still to me every time that I do it. I probably do it, but at the moment in winter, more like 4 or 5 times a week. Mm. Yeah.
So those other times that you don't, just put oil on the body before you're about to shower.
Really?
Yeah, just getting that habit of lubricating.
Yes.
Especially the orifices, like the crown of the head, just a little bit on the crown of the head.
Yeah.
Put some oil in your ears and in your nostrils.
It feels so different, yeah.
And belly button and hands and feet, just like quick, for a minute or less. Just we need to, not just showering and washing with water, we need to oileate.
Yeah, especially the water. I mean, I don't have my shower purifier at the moment, but it's so drying.
Yeah.
The chlorine as well.
It's more important to purify your shower than your drinking water.
Oh, really?
Because you have, you know, especially your hot shower, or your pores open up, goes in, transdermal poison, and also you breathe it in.
Yeah,
so
that's
if
right.
anyone, and this is a great thing for pregnancy and postnatal when you've got kids and everything throughout the whole journey, is to purify your water.
That's when I actually got our first water purifier for the shower. That was my babysitting tactic sometimes to get stuff done around the house. Was Leroy loved to sit in the shower and just play with his little toys, and he would stay in there for ages. Mm-hmm. And I remember just coming in one time and the fumes of the smell of a chlorine, which I hate because I hate using indoor pools. It's like being back in England, horrible. And I just like, oh my God, we've got to do something about this. Yeah. And that makes total sense when the pores are really open. So chlorine really kills that microbiome, as it does through drinking tap water as well.
Yeah.
Can kill a lot of the bacteria in the gut.
Yeah. And there's of course other chemicals, but chlorine is one of the main ones.
Yeah.
And the best is to get a whole house filter if you know, especially even if you don't own a house, they're easy to take on and off.
Yeah.
Just
right.
do everything. And, you know, I recommend Extreme Wellness water filters.
Yeah, we might have to put some links or something.
Yeah, he's awesome. He just made it a couple months ago.
Oh,
he's been,
okay,
he's
cool.
been doing it for years and amazing. Got the best of the best.
Yeah. So let's talk, I suppose, Abhyanga, people can come to your website to see, like you've got some visuals on there as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, they can download a poster.
Yeah, it's awesome. And let's talk a bit more about this Vata pacifying, I think, postpartum. There's a lot of talk at the moment, people concerned about losing their hair
mm-hmm.
postpartum, people feeling really depleted postpartum. What can we do to avoid and to help?
Well, one thing is, you know, making sure your birthing is as balanced and harmonious as possible where you come in. Check she births out and, you know, just know your options of what you can do and be aware of everything. And then, the postnatal is just really it's the sooner the better. Like for people who do hear this before, you know, that's great. And even some people come see me, you know, I have one woman coming today who's 7 months postnatal. Or the other week, the other day I saw her, 7 months. And that's fine. Like there's still, we can do great things.
Yeah.
But if they can intervene sooner, that's great. So, I mean, the big thing is really, it may seem a little inaccessible for people, but the main thing we give, and I guess because it's the most powerful, is the herbs.
Yeah.
Really, like there's herbs which can help straight away with all that, because all these things which manifest like losing the hair, fatigue, all these things, it's because they're not balancing the hormones and the Vata.
Yeah.
So if we can really do that, but even there's so many other things, like the herbs specific for me, and maybe some other, I can tell some formulas, maybe you can put them in the one classical formula. It's called Dashmula Arishta.
Okay.
It's a wine. It's like it's a medicated wine, and everyone can have, you know, 25 milliliters twice a day after meals.
Great. Wine after birth. No worries.
Yeah. Or three times even. So again, there's a better one, which I have called Balankada.
Yeah.
If they can get that, but it's not as hard. It's not as easy to get.
But it's not like a proper wine, right? It's not like wine that you would get from a cellar or something.
No, can it's a herbal. What it is? It's got like 30 herbs in it, and it's not made with grapes. It's made with a type of flour, but it tastes like wine.
Okay, cool.
It tastes like red wine.
Good.
So that's one thing, the herbs are important, and literally just the ghee and the garlic makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And being with the baby, you know, after during that 40 days and especially the 11 days, and not having, you know, many people come during the first 11 days and really having that mother baby connection will balance their Vata and their nervous system and strengthen them, so that they won't, if they're getting inflicted with too much overwhelming visitors and activity and going out, not only their baby is going to, when their baby gets affected with the Vata, because they'll get it affected as well if they go expose their senses too much, the mother will feel it.
Yeah.
So maintaining that connection, but definitely the doing the protocol of the diet and the food.
That's really helpful, I think, for a lot of people. And what about massage? Because, I mean, I've seen, so many people go into kind of nervous system overwhelm and freak out, and just simple massage for the mother can help so much. But what's the sort of Ayurvedic? There's a time period you're allowed to do it, not allowed to do it.
Yeah, so for the first 11 days, it's said that even first, when baby comes out, you can give both baby and mum massage and bath.
Cool.
Then it's even said to just to give you a, I guess, a ballpark to just consider, is that it's said for the first 11 days, mother and baby just stay with each other. That's it. And don't even have to have a shower for 11 days.
No.
Or definitely not the oil massage, and definitely not the baby.
No.
So you want to maintain the micro a bit, right?
Yeah.
And it said even the husband or the partner.
Yeah.
Is there just to serve.
Yeah.
It should just be mum and child.
Yeah.
And the husband's at the door to protect and to serve.
Yeah.
And it's just that will create a significant bond.
Yeah.
And for the whole life again. And that's, you know, the first 11 days is kind of more intense for that, or more, I guess, enhanced. And then even then it extends to 40 days.
Yeah.
Or you can say 21 days, then 41 days.
Yeah.
And that 40 days, again, it's you know, don't want to expose the baby's senses to access. That's why they say to stay at home. It's just so you don't get any wind, especially if it's windy, noises, all these things.
Overstimulation and unsettling. So do you start massaging mum? Like, could she start coming to you for massage at 21 days?
Or
people 21 come days. To the house, what do they do?
Yeah, people can come to the house or she can go if she feels.
Yeah.
But I like the house because even mid-massage, baby might want... or we can do massage with the baby held, like, you know.
Yeah.
Why holding the baby on your stomach, on your chest?
Yeah.
We can massage the rest of the body.
Oh, that's cute. I can imagine that. That would be so cute. That would be so cute.
It is.
So
21 days, the mother can start getting massaged by other people. After 11 days, she can start doing herself.
Yeah. I mean, Indian women, and it's just so powerful, that Abhyanga then postpartum, it's so rebuilding and tonifying and strengthening. So, you know, in an ideal world, you'd have one after birth and then you would rest for 11 days and then at 21 days you would start getting daily massages.
Yeah, daily.
That would be the ideal, right? Even if it's just a 30-minute massage.
45.
Well, and even do your own Abhyanga if you can't do that.
Yeah. Everyone should be doing every day.
Yeah.
So, especially postnatal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even after 11 days, they can do the self Abhyanga.
They can do self.
You just have someone else's different energy coming in.
Okay, so that's interesting. That's really good to distinguish.
Even the pregnancy, we need to be very careful with getting treatments else with other people. Not just because of the energy, but with the strength, the amount of pressure and all these things. That's why they say self Abhyanga is the best, because the mother knows her own body. And especially in the first trimester and the 8th month, better not get a treatment from someone else. Not even, I mean, when we do Abhyanga on pregnant women, and my teacher was kind of very strict, she says feather touch.
Really?
Some women is like, it's not enough. You know, they want something more.
Yeah.
So I just say do self-Abhyanga.
But
we still do.
Yeah, fascinating. Mm. And I do love how in India, and I don't know if anyone's ever seen it, you can look at Indian babies getting massaged and it's just the most delicious thing in the world to watch them and to see them lying. So say you're a mum and you're sitting with your legs straight out in front of you, like you're about to do a forward bend or Paschimottanasana, and the baby's just lying in between their legs and the mum's just grabbing their limbs and running their hands down the legs and down the arms and round on the belly and over their faces and then flipping them over and doing the back body. It's just the most beautiful thing.
So beautiful, and it's unfortunately it's been lost in the West, and even in India, it's starting to lose.
Even in India too, right? Everyone gets busy and they don't do it.
It's so important for a baby. It's like one of the most important things is to build their tissues and build their immunity. This is like a natural immunization program.
Wow!
And the babies that I've seen, like, they love it. I'm so proud, like, to have some clients who do it every day to their baby, and their baby is so strong and they feel the effects. And
I see the tone. I see the physical tone and the strength and the calmness in those kids as well.
Yeah.
They're not as erratic, and in their minds they might have an intelligence, but they're more embodied. They're in themselves.
In their body, exactly.
So when do people start massaging the baby themselves? Like anytime?
After 11 days.
It's okay, after 11 days. Yeah, sorry, I'm just like getting confused. With
numbers after 11 days and before their bath. So
before the bath.
Yeah.
Oh, cute.
Before the bath, not after. A lot
then
of
they're slippery little suckers. You have to be careful.
Yes, yeah. And it's so, you know, one of your clients as well.
Yeah.
The Ozzy's, Jess and Tony.
Yeah.
You know, she's what now? Probably not even two. She does her own. Like, she bends
little
down.
Little India does her own massages. Oh my God.
She loves it. She, like, every day she looks forward to it, every evening before bath.
Oh, that is just gorgeous, isn't it?
And and also to do all this before eating. We should not eat and have a bath.
Yeah.
And there's so many parents, I think they want it because it's more clean.
That's right. They do bath after dinner.
And always we should never, with everyone, should not have bath after food, because the digestive fire then goes to the skin.
Yeah.
To deal with the water hitting the skin should stay in the digestion. So.
Yeah. So do oil massage, then bath, then dinner.
Then eat. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just give your baby a nice wipe on the face and then go to bed.
That's right. Yeah. It doesn't matter. We've got bibs and all that kind of stuff. Oh, it's so cute.
So yeah. It's so important, the oil massage for the baby especially.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. So is there anything else you can think of that we could share with our pregnant families or people preparing for pregnancy or those, you know, a lot of them at home with kids all different ages, you know? What would you sort of say to them right now?
Well, especially before the conception, if you're lucky enough to get this knowledge before then really purify as much as you can, especially for 3 months before.
Yeah, because, before conceiving.
Yeah, because whatever the state of, you know, his sperm and her ovum is, will be that baby's future. You know, the doshas are determined, the natural doshas, which we call the prakriti, as you said, the name of that book, is determined at the time of conception.
Yeah.
So it's we call it the bija doshas or the seed doshas. So that future human's life and health for their whole life, even when they're 60 years old, will be dependent on those doshas in the sperm and ovum.
So
just minimizing the toxins as much as possible. Like if you drink alcohol, then try not drink for 3 months. Coffee, anything good, make sure all the food is pure. Just be as sattvic, as pure, as happy. That's what the pregnancy, the rules aren't very strict. It's just there's some foods you have to avoid because it will cause the fetus to go out. But the rest is just be happy. Do whatever makes you happy. If you have cravings, fulfill your cravings, fulfill your desires. The women should be like a queen and like just enjoy. And there's not many rules. So maintain that preconception and pregnancy and all the things, meditation, being in the nature, reducing work as much as possible if you have the, you know, luxury to do that, or you claim your deserving power and your birthright to do that and take action and, you know, step into that abundance, you know, mindset and state of consciousness of that. I can be provided for, whether it's by your partner or by nature, and own the fact that you don't have to work. And even with me, I speak to, you know, some young people not wanting to conceive. They're waiting till later. And they want to do their career first, or they want to, you know, make money. They need to enhance the abundance consciousness, but also, you know, we can do the career later. You know, you got all the time
to
do.
I did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do, you know, because it's just, if we can conceive more in the 20s or before 30, it's easier. It's a better chance.
Yeah.
And also there's better health. But that doesn't mean, you know, definitely we can conceive in the late 30s and even the early 40s we've conceived.
Yeah.
Just going to be more work and
in
terms of more preconception work for the health.
For sure.
And then, yeah.
And then postpartum.
Postpartum is, the most important in Ayurveda because it's just, really what, as I said, blueprinting on that child. So again, doing the herbs, really honoring that connection period, which we say for 40 days of just, you know, immediate family. Like you don't even have to have, you know, if you don't want to have your parents being the parents, then just communicate that clearly and for at least 11 days or whatever it is, or you don't want to have someone, just really take the time and create a peaceful environment, reduce the radiation in the house, clean air, clean water, clean food, you know, especially water. It's a foundational element. You don't want to be bathing your baby in tap water.
So, and that resting will build the nourishment, will give you the energy to carry you forward, that 40 days for 40 years.
Yes.
And then, you know, the herbs and the that we've been talking about and other ones, they're going to help with, you know, balancing the thyroid and all those things that might be causing things like hair loss as well, and that kidney energy depletion, we call it in Chinese medicine. But just that overall depletion will create excessive fatigue and the body starting to go into disease and so on.
Exactly. 40 days for 40 years. So if you really honor that, then they won't come.
Yeah.
It's the same with chronic fatigue. I mean, people who get it just go, and that's the ones who have got it.
Yeah.
So if you start at that time when you're kind of vulnerable and you need to rebuild, honor that. And then for the future, you'll be set.
Yeah. I'm a good testament to that. I mean, I really rested for about 3 weeks and my health started to fall apart. Yeah, around the 20-year mark. We're nearly at it now, and it's really starting to dismantle. But I've also been a bit of a go person as well. Big ambitions, so kept going and working a lot. But yeah, I really honor Ayurveda for helping me in my life with yoga, a yoga practice. It is part of yoga, to just maintaining and meditation, to maintaining my sanity and my creative abilities and yeah, my intelligence and happiness. Because if we don't look after the body, we can't be happy.
Yeah.
It's just impossible. Without, yeah, without health, we don't have happiness, right?
Yeah.
That's it. Well, thank you for sharing all your amazing wisdom and all your experience. It's just been so interesting. I hope people get lots of information and wisdom and tips and strategies and tools and so on from that. And, yeah, we'll put your links to your site. What is it? It's vitalveda.com.au. Yeah, so V-I-T-A-L-V-E-D-A.
Yep.
That is Dylan. Best masseur in the world. I'm going to hit the bed now.
And I also did an awesome podcast with Nadine, with yourself. So check that out on my podcast, the Vital Veda podcast. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, thanks,
very much
darling.
It's
a well-loved one. And I do, you know, whoever you are with, the conversation is always different. And so, yeah, it's always, it brought out something different in me being talked, you know, interviewed by you. And that's a cool thing as well. So thanks, Dylan. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Nadine Richardson, and you've been listening to The She Births Show. If you have enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, share with a friend, and leave us a review. We'd love to know what you would like to hear more of. You can find me and my team of doulas and educators at shebirths.com. That's plural, shebirths, like she births a baby. And of course, our awesome community is on Instagram and Facebook. Even in the App Store, you'll be able to download our free pregnancy support guide via the She Births app. That's plural again, and it's two words. So you can access as well our online She Births courses that way too. Remember, when it comes to having a better birth, an easier transition into parenthood, your education is your empowerment. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed the show.